Welcome to the weekly broadcast of Let's Talk About It, produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO AM 1230 and FM 107.5 Radio. Let's Talk About It is directed by Mario Espinosa, with the technical assistance of Carol Buckley. Opening and closing narration is provided by Gene Brister. This program brings weekly community mental health issues to your radio. Let's Talk About It is produced for and presented as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Leticia Plancarte Garcia, Director. And now, let's join our co-hosts, Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley, for today's program.
This is Let's Talk About It, your voice for radio wellness, sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, and we are here with a brand new show, which is always cool. And we're here with one of my favorite people, actually, too, Krista Magana. She's a program supervisor over at Alcohol and Drug. Are you adolescent or grown up?
Adolescent.
Aren't those the cool people anyway?
Always.
So, and we have a really good topic today. It is harm reduction is the topic. Now, I'm saying this as kind of a preview because I want you to think about this. Really, it's really important. First of all, you're probably going to get benefit out of this show because harm reduction can apply to so many different things. And when we talk about this, you'll be like, oh, I could do this with this or that or anything. Secondly, you may have adolescents yourself. And they may be experimenting with substance use. And this is an important topic. Thirdly, you're going to know people in the community who are struggling with substance use. 1 in 8 people in any given population has a substance use disorder. That's not just somebody who maybe like a little bit too much, a little bit too often. That's somebody that has an actual treatable, diagnosable disorder. So any of those people could also benefit from harm reduction. So what we'd love you to do is to hit up the podcast, go to kxlradio.com, click on the Let's Talk About It link, and look for this show. If you're hearing it live on the radio right now, it's going to be put up maybe a week or two afterwards at the KXL Radio website as a podcast. What we want you to do is we want you to share the podcast because you could save somebody's life. You could change somebody's trajectory. A youth who might have, otherwise really displaced or endangered their lives, may be able to put stuff together and have a really bright future because you sent them the show via podcast. So that's really what we want you to do. That's what community radio is all about. I am so glad you're listening. Longtime listeners, you know this because I nag you all the time. Brand new listeners, that's what we're about. And we're so glad you're here today for the show. Hey, Kristen, we are glad you're here for the show today too. Welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me, Scott. I always appreciate coming on and getting to chat.
I am so stoked about this show because when I was working with the substance use disorder community, we couldn't even say the words harm reduction out loud or we wouldn't get billed for it. It was a forbidden terminology with state alcohol and drug. So the fact that we've come far enough that we can have a radio show about it is like, I see so much possibility and hope in this.
Not only just say it, but put it into effect and really put it out there and make sure people know it's good. I think that's something that we're always striving for, is really making sure people understand it's positive and it's something we want in our community.
Nice. So let's take a short step back and start with harm reduction. What is it? And specifically with substance use disorders, how does it apply?
So NIDA, which we use so much, or the National Institute of Drug Administration, it actually defines harm reduction as interventions aimed to help people avoid negative effects of drug use. So since I work in SUD or substance use disorder, we specifically apply harm reduction to drug use. Some of the things that we're offering right now, and obviously the ultimate negative effect being death. So really when we're looking at harm reduction for substance use, we're looking at avoiding death.
We don't lowering your risk for death.
Right.
Straight up.
We want people to live. We want people to live and be able to get in treatment and to survive treatment and become sober and really just, be able to participate in life. So some of the things behavioral health has implemented as harm reduction, We have fentanyl testing strips, which, you know, fentanyl has become extremely, unfortunately, popular in the last few years.
And really common on the streets.
Extremely common. Whether you want to come across it or not, fentanyl is an extremely potent opioid. First started seeing it three, four years ago. And, you know, unfortunately, we've seen it make its way into the Imperial Valley. And we've seen people, whether it be opioid or heroin addicts, already using and escalating use to purposely seeking out fentanyl. Or someone who's maybe trying to look for something else, whether it be methamphetamines or pills, and coming across fentanyl accidentally, as other drugs are often laced with it. You know, one of the ways we're trying to combat that overdose by overdose is with our fentanyl testing strips, which we are handing out to clients, both adults and adolescents. And what these strips do is we do give it to our clients who, even if, like I say, if they say they're not using opioids, but if they're using pills and other substances, we give it to them as well. And they can actually take a part of whatever they're using, take about a cap full of water, a water bottle cap full, mix their substance in it and dip the strip in it to see if it tests positive for fentanyl. This is something that, again, like, we're hoping it really, we've been distributing them for about a year and a half, 2 years now, I believe. And we're trying to really put that out in the community to make sure that you don't overdose, that you know what you're taking. Because we have seen situations where adolescents come to us and they say, oh, I bought what they thought was a Xanax or a Percocet, some sort of pill, and then they end up having an opioid overdose, unfortunately. Or even withdrawal symptoms, if they don't overdose, they end up going through harsh opioid withdrawals because there were other drugs laced or mixed in with what they were intending to take.
So, yeah, so let's be crystal clear on this. When people buy things over the street, in the street, even if it looks like it was some sort of prescription drug at one point in time, but, you know, you're not the person it was prescribed to, there are no guarantees anymore that that may not contain fentanyl, which is easy to overdose on because so little of it is used to get an effect, that you could be inadvertently risking your life because you're taking something that you're not really sure what it is. And these testing strips then allow people to make sure at least that they're not poisoning themselves with fentanyl.
Correct. And that's, like I said, we want people to stay alive and to not have these negative repercussions. So that's the purpose, is we want people to have these in their possession. We want, you know, adolescents and adults to use these strips because there is no guarantee right now, buying something on the street, what exactly you're getting. The only way to absolutely know for sure you're getting something is if you're getting it at a pharmacy, in the United States. And I mean, it is worth it to say fentanyl is a prescribed drug use for actual legitimate reasons. I actually had a grandmother who had cancer, and her last month she was actually put on fentanyl patches to help with pain management. You know, as unfortunately she was in the process of passing away, and something that was supposed to help manage that end of life pain. So,
right.
You know, fentanyl does get prescribed and there is a use for it, just like there's, you know, use for morphine and other drugs. But unfortunately, you know, it has become abused. It has become, like I said, more so put into other drugs that, like I said, really popular right now, pills, and there's absolutely no way to know it's there.
I heard a story, I think by NPR, about a month and a half ago that said that they had tested opioid pain relievers that were of various types, like codeine and Percocet, that they had obtained in Mexico at a pharmacy, and that they had found fentanyl in those legally obtained prescription drugs.
Did you send that article to us? Because if not...
Yeah, that was me.
Okay, I was going to say, because I read the same one, and that's why I specifically said pharmacies in the U.S. And being a border town, you know, we encounter very unique situations, right? Not everyone is... My office in Calexico is, I want to say, 2 miles away from the border. You know, not everyone gets to go to a whole different country for the weekend or, you know, has that close proximity. And I know that is definitely one of the things that, as reports come out, we keep a close eye on, this being our hometown, this being our community, you know, is the fact that even a pharmacy in Mexicali, which we all frequent so much, it's, like I said, minutes away, even at this point, those pharmaceuticals can't be trusted. So it's really important, like I said, especially for as outreach, as just people who give information, to let people know that when these things come up, we kind of let the community know, being that we are that border town, and make sure that everyone's aware. So yeah, that's why I specifically said pharmacies on the U.S. side, because as of right now, with the new reports coming out, even going across the border to buy something out of the pharmacy, there are starting to be reports of fentanyl being included in those as well.
Yeah. You know, and that is the magic of harm reduction, and why that change has been so important in terms of how we treat people. Because prior to this, we couldn't say, the only thing we could talk about was sobriety. The only thing we could talk about was stopping drug use. And that isn't always practical or possible for some people, especially in the early stages of recovery. So something like handing out fentanyl test strips to prevent people from accidentally poisoning themselves wouldn't have been allowed, you know, like 15 years ago. And it is so cool now that we have kind of grown up to the fact that this is an important first step in terms of keeping people safe while they work through their substance use patterns, their substance use needs, and eventually come towards a recovery that is safer and doesn't need these types of harm reduction methods, right?
That, and being able, you know, working with minors, my career as a supervisor has been in adolescent substance use disorder with adolescents. And we always come across these caveats or these barriers sometimes when working with adolescents, right? Because they're minors. And with harm reduction, along with harm reduction, we've also been able to not just provide these things to adults, but to minors as well. So having to be able, or being able to go into schools and to talk to these kids who are using it frequently and using it willingly, and sometimes even seeking out fentanyl to use, or other opioids, being able to give it directly to them.
I mean, it's called Fenty in school, right?
Yeah, I mean,
They have a pet name for it already.
Yeah, Fetia. I've heard them refer, like, the word money in Spanish. I've heard them call it lots of different things. You know, I graduated from Southwest in, what was it, 2005, and I feel like it's completely different.
You got out just in time.
Yeah, there it's at no way, you know, I get to sit in on the groups and listen to the kids, and it definitely gives you a different perspective. It gives you, you know, that insight to what's going on, and seeing the nonchalance sometimes that it's spoken about with among the adolescents is alarming, to say the least. So I'm glad that we are, you know, not only to provide the harm reduction strategies to adults, but to minors as well, because again, they're the ones directly sometimes seeking out the drugs, or you know, doing dangerous activities. And one of the other things we've been able to do, aside from the fentanyl testing strips, is distributing Narcan.
Narcan, tell us about Narcan.
So Narcan is specifically is the what is used to reverse overdoses, specifically in reference to, again, to just the opioids. So if it is a heroin, if it is a fentanyl, any type of opioid overdose, if you administer the Narcan, it will reverse the person from the overdose. We actually got a grant, and I was able to talk to some of our analysts who submitted this grant. So shout out to Jonathan Garcia and Gabriela Isagiri. So they're our analysts in substance use, and they do some awesome work. So one of the huge things they've done that's made a really big difference is they actually put together a grant. It was the Naloxone Distribution Project grant. And what this did is they actually gave us 252 units, or allowed us to get 252 units of Narcan, or Naloxone as it's known, and we're able to distribute that through the community. So we're currently on our second round of this grant. And with this grant, our not only our substance use teams, but also we distribute it to our triage unit as well. We're able to give these units of Narcan to different people who come in contact not just our clients, but community members, family members, or what we call significant support people. So I know I myself have gone to schools in the Imperial Valley, and where there are schools where both teachers and administration have been informed by the kids that there's possibly fentanyl on campus, or kids are reporting seeing other kids overdose at parties. I have given teachers and counselors Narcan myself to have on campus, to have, you know, to make sure that that's something they have access to.
And you have to take a class or anything to know how to administer it, or is it something that's easy enough to figure out?
So easy enough to figure out, but what I do is I do go over it with them, and I also show a video. There's a YouTube video that's less than 5 minutes, and it's beautiful because it's easy. So it looks really similar to like a nasal spray almost, but like a single-use nasal spray. So I usually talk to them about it when it comes to like school administration. Also really amazing to see some of the schools in the Imperial Valley, they've taken a very proactive approach and they've trained staff on how to administer it already. I know, like I said, being in the industry that we're in with substance use and being in close contact with it, we are all trained as far as my staff, transport staff, my clerical in office, myself, and of course our direct providers, we're all trained on how to administer it. But when we do help people outside, like I said, what we'll do is I'll verbally go over it with them. I'll show them a YouTube video of it, and make sure they're very aware and feel comfortable enough using it. And like I said, that's our community members. And then what my staff does is when they're working with adolescents, or even on our adult counterparts, whenever we're working with anyone who lets us know they're using that, or especially if they have a history of overdose, we give it to that person directly. And you know what, if their family members or friends they live with, if they know they're using, we don't just give our clients that, we actually give their friends and family members, or like I said, what we call significant support. So we make sure everyone who's around this person is educated and aware. And so, because again, we want that person to stay alive. We want that person to make it through. So really, it's about educating everyone that we can and making sure that we're all as safe as possible.
It's a big step because substance use was always viewed as a character flaw, right? And so ultimately, a person who had an opioid addiction concern would have been told before, well, if you want to survive, just stop using. And maybe some supports would have been offered for that. But ultimately, that would have been the bottom line ultimatum in terms of their safety. So the idea that we can put into the environment life-saving, instantly life-saving. I don't know if anybody has seen somebody come back from Narcan. I mean, they've been on TV shows, and it's been sometimes in the media. It's like right now. And they're mad at you because, you know, they're no longer under the influence, and they were seeking that feeling, but they're alive. And before, they may have been barely breathing. They may have been passed out. They may have been really, you know, their fingers turned blue, all sorts of indicators that this person's going to die unless something happens right away. And Narcan is amazing in terms of how well it works, but it's amazing that we've been able to turn the corner on this kind of judgmental view of substance using people and realize, no, this is an illness. And ultimately, illnesses require different things to cure them. And just like a person with diabetes, you know, may go through cycles. They may be really good and stay on insulin and everything's wonderful. And then they may have a relapse and they may start eating things that aren't really healthy again and run into problems with their disorder. It is just about the same thing. So I'm so glad you guys are doing what you're doing. This is Let's Talk About It. We're sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Kristen Magana, Program Supervisor, SUD Adolescent. We're talking harm reduction in a variety of circumstances. We'll be right back after this short break.
Let's Talk About It, bringing community mental health issues to your radio. Listen each Sunday morning to KXO AM 1230 at 7 a.m. and now on Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Or log on to KXORadio.com for a 5-minute podcast highlight of the show or the show in its entirety. This program is produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO AM 1230 and FM 107.5. Let's Talk About It is presented as a public service of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, Wellness Radio, brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, weekly wellness radio. So you could join us, tune in every single week, wherever you're catching the show. It's going to come back again next week. Or obviously you can catch the podcast, go to kxlradio.com, click on the Let's Talk About It link, and you'll get this podcast and any other podcast. And if you want to talk to Kristen, who's our guest today, and I'll introduce her in a second, or if you want to talk to the Let's Talk About It staff, we can line up shows. We've done that for some people. We've answered questions for people. We've dealt with immediate concerns and problems even for some folks. You can catch us. We've got an email address. It's called Wellness Radio, all together, no separation there, Wellness Radio at co.imperial.ca.us, which if anybody is familiar with the county email backside, that is exactly what it is. So wellnessradio at co.imperial.ca.us, and it will ring in all of our inboxes. Kristen isn't part of that, but if you've got a question for Kristen, I'll get it, and I'll go to, hey, Kristen, I just got a question from a radio show listener. So that is a way to stay in communication with us, right? And then obviously like us, love us, share us on Facebook, because that's where we put a lot of our advertising and a lot of our kind of prep for the show. And we'd love you to share that and love it so that it shows up on more people's walls and more people are informed about Wellness Radio, right? Welcome back, everyone. Kristen Magana is here with us. She's program supervisor at the SUD Adolescent Clinic. Now, which regional clinics do you supervise, Kristen?
So I actually see
like all of them.
Yeah, right. So I love that question because it makes me giggle every time I get asked. So we have two clinics, one in El Centro, one in Calexico, and then I also supervise, we have services at Juvenile Hall as well. So, but those are just our home bases, are our clinics. We go into a ton of schools, you know, and provide services. So basically
high schools and middle schools, right? Or do you have any middle schools or
high
all high schools,
schools? For the most part, we are starting to talk to a few of the middle schools, but it is predominantly the high schools that we're actually in. Like I said, I have counselors that actually go to and just, you know, like I said, like we were talking about earlier, we provide this harm reduction as far as fentanyl testing and the Narcan. But what we do is we always try to involve counseling and involve treatment. So, you know, harm reduction, a piece of the puzzle that we provide. But we really, you know, try to emphasize our counseling services. We offer individual counseling, we offer group counseling, we offer family counseling. And that's, you know, all in-house at in the valley where it can be at our clinics. Like I said, we try to be as accessible as possible. We try to make sure there's no interruption to services. So if we do have a youth who is in a school and maybe gets picked up and put in juvenile hall, we continue services. When they come back out, we continue services. We try to link them anywhere that they might need to be linked if they're not yet involved with mental health. Anything that we can't do here locally, we do contract and try to refer people out. So, for example, our residential services, we don't currently have a residential facility in the Imperial Valley. We have some people inside behavioral health who are working really hard to change that, though. I know recently that our assistant director, Gabby Jimenez, and then our deputy for SUD, Victoria Mansfield, were working on a grant that they submitted, along with our analyst, like you said, who did the Narcan distribution project, to apply to get funding to open up a residential facility here for people 18 and over. So although we don't have one right now, we do have contracts with different people in such as San Diego, Tarzana, where if we do assess someone and they're at that level of need, we not only can link them, but we provide transport for them. We do provide transport to anyone who needs our services. And in the case of even our adolescents, when you do go to those facilities, you need to be with your guardian at the time for the intake, and we give transport to the family member as well.
One of the real challenges of a small county with our resources is the legitimate truth that some people need higher levels of services. And because we are a smaller county with limited resources, those may be hard to obtain. That really puts a lot of pressure on prevention and early intervention. Is that something where harm reduction also works, Kristen?
Yes, and bringing that up too, so not only do I supervise all our treatment programs in juvenile hall, I also supervise our outreach and prevention areas as well for the county and adolescents. So we have some really great community service workers doing some really amazing work in our community. We have currently right now, I have three working for me. I have Danny Gutierrez, who is assigned to our El Centro area and kind of surrounding areas, Raleigh, Hopeville and all that area. And then I have two other community service workers, Hazel Avalos and Edgar Gomez in Calexico. And they do things like any sort of, we have resource tables. So if there's any sort of event where you think knowledge or questions of any of this might come up, they have a table, we have brochures, and they're able to answer questions on how to refer people. We also do what's called Too Good for Drugs, which is an evidence-based early intervention program. We're currently doing those at Central Union High School and I believe Bully Moreno in junior high in Calexico. And what it is it's 12 sessions, 10 sessions of lessons and then a pre and a post test for a total of 12 weeks. And it gives adolescents, this is geared towards adolescents who haven't developed a substance use disorder yet, but really emphasizes goal making, decision making, those types of skills to direct them away from that. And then we also do presentations in the community, which I have to say has been on the rise this past year. I think this has been the busiest we've ever been since pre-COVID. COVID kind of hit a lot of people in the healthcare industry, not just from having to take care of people, but a lot of our face-to-face and a lot of our events kind of got canceled, got slowed down, and getting back to normal has been, a struggle for everyone. So I think at this point I can pretty comfortably say that we're even busier, or either as busy, if not busier, than we were pre-COVID as far as working with schools. And like I said, not just doing outreach, but I've seen Southwest Central last night just had a fentanyl forum where we had a resource table at. I know probation was there, as well as our newest supervisor, former substance use disorder counselor, Warren Sanchez, spoke. We had a resource table there. Southwest had done a fentanyl forum previously on in the school year, and I had one of my counselors there to really discuss with the community what we see, what we talk to the kids about, or what we hear the kids talk to us about. I have presentations specifically on fentanyl, and I also have one specifically on more popular drugs, marijuana, methamphetamine, fentanyl, opioids in general, prescription medications, and that sort of thing. And I've had way more requests, I can very confidently say that, in the past 6 months than I've ever seen. I have schools actually reaching out to me saying, instead of me reaching out saying, hey, I have this, can I do these presentations? I have schools reaching out to me and my staff saying, do you have something? Can you come? And they're very much initiating it and making room for us in the schools and making time for us to do those presentations and educate the community.
I feel like this would be the perfect opportunity for everybody listening right now to pick up a pencil and a piece of paper. And Kristen, for you to give them your phone number so that they can call you for presentations. Does that make sense? It really does. Kristen's like scrambling, like, which phone number should I give them?
Yeah. So I'm not in my office. I'm in someone's
office. Oh, you're not.
Right now, no. Part of being over all the clinics is bouncing around.
Is that you go from place to place to place to place. So keep thinking about this and let's keep talking, because I want to draw another point back to harm reduction. And that is that ultimately, when you're looking at people who use substances and end up having problems with that, substance use disorders, you're looking at people that are almost always trauma affected. So there's been some bad stuff that's happened in their lives. They're hurting. And the substance, their drug of choice, if you will, offers them some sort of coping respite. And it's survival coping, so, it is what it is. But ultimately, it comes with its own risks and its own consequences and its own problems. And so if we're talking prevention, early intervention, then we're talking an evidence-based prevention program like Too Good for Drugs, going out and making a real difference by putting all these resiliency factors in place that are going to help people to get through traumas instead of kind of just trying to shame away drug use. Because just say no, just said no. It wasn't very effective. They did studies on it and stuff like that didn't work. Staring into the coffin at a mirror of yourself was so traumatic to some kids that it actually increased drug use because they'd been they'd lost family members to drugs. They'd been involved in some scary situations, and that just kind of re-triggered them all about that stuff. So let's talk about triggers, Kristen, and let's talk about harm reduction and triggers. What can we do for that?
I'm very glad you brought that up, Scott, because that's definitely something that comes up in treatment. Harm reduction can be looked at many different ways. Like I said, I think the most popular is always, like I said, fentanyl strips, Narcan, using sterile needles, like those sort of things. But there's also some harm reduction techniques that we implement in therapy or even in our treatment that, you know, does deserve a little bit more attention. So typically when we provide counseling, like I said, we want to try to avoid all the negative. Our goal is to obviously reduce and stop use and avoid these negative effects of drug use, the ultimate negative effect being death. But we provide all of our clients really with different ways to cope and different strategic ways to handle everyday encounters that might be triggers, that might, you know, involve trauma and those sort of things. So some of the situations that we've come across with our clients, you know, just having kind of, we just started March, we're kind of freshly coming off of the holidays, is we did see an increase in the holidays of stress among the youth. And this was really across both of the clinics that I supervise, is we had people who were in our care who hadn't necessarily vocalized the trauma they had before. They had alluded to it. And with the holidays, when they came around, they let us know there is either a specific type of abuse or, you know, something that caused a trauma. And because of the holidays, they were going to be forced to be around that person or possibly be in close contact with that person that had inflicted the trauma.
The abuser.
Exactly. And so what we do in these situations is really work with them to strategize. Like, hey, if you're going to be in the same area as someone, can you make sure you always have someone with you so it's not that you're alone? Can you stay on the opposite side of the house? You know, things like that to try to alleviate the stress. And that kind of goes with really modifying those triggers, not having, you know, really strategizing with our client. And we can't control the situations you're going to be in, but maybe we can give you tools to make them better. And this is really kind of the outlook we take for treatment. So when it comes to people who are using in high frequency amounts, let's say we get someone who uses marijuana or honestly anything 7 days a week, we go, okay, we understand that you're using, and maybe going from 7 days a week to absolutely nothing can seem like an impossible task.
And not very realistic, right? For us to kind of make that demand, even if they're maybe motivated to head in that direction, not very realistic.
Right. So we give them a reasonable goal. We say, hey, what if we go from 7 days a week to 5 days a week? Like, does that seem doable? And they usually go, you know what? Like, maybe that I can do. Like, that's something I can make an effort towards at the very least.
And so that's identified as an actual goal, right?
Correct. And we always try, like I said, that's a big one for us. Regardless of what they're using, is we try to minimize that. So we put that, which for adolescents, we still have treatment plans. We make that an actual goal of theirs because, you know, we always like to see something tangible and something like we can feel like we accomplished, right? Like we did something. So if we have someone using 7 days a week, like I said, and then we work with them, we say, okay, like, do you have tests on Thursdays or Fridays? Yes. Yeah, like, well, how about we don't use on the days you have tests and see if that helps? And really strategize with each individual person to see what would make the most improvements on their life. So then maybe them going from, not only are they going from 7 days a week to 5 days a week of use, but then they might see their test scores go up or homework scores. And so we're really working on improving various areas of their life, you know, using this harm reduction strategy. And sometimes, no, do you see it going from overnight? Like, do you see this, you know, 7 days to 0 days a week? No, but there's this process of really making sure there's constant improvement and constant bettering and safe practices that we instill over time. So hopefully, obviously, the end goal being if we go from 7 to 5 days a week, and maybe from 5 to 3 days a week, and then maybe 3 to just 2 days a week, maybe just the weekend, not even during the week, to eventually get him to get to that, oh, wow, I went to, you know, I was able
I just made it a whole week.
Right. So it's very, there's a process, and there's what I like to say, a method to the madness. And, you know, we see these and we implement these with the kids and we see it help them. And, you know, we see how excited they get when they are able and like, hey, like that did help. And I was able to, you know, stop, you know, use and not use for 7 days straight and see that improvement and see the difference it makes with that positive reinforcement.
A lot of this is done in a group setting, and it seems like there would be natural advantages that, for example, you'd have some people in your groups perhaps who had already gotten down to maybe not using or just using 1 or 2 days a week, and they could kind of share their successes, and that would be infectious to the people who are just starting. Obviously, you know, talking about triggers, you could talk about, well, here's what I do to get through mine, and the guy sitting next to you could say, wow, that's a really good idea, I hadn't thought of that, and then they could try it, and it might work for them. I imagine it's also challenging in a way, too, because you've got a group of people who may be drug-using friends and may share those links and those bonds, and that may make relapse a concern as well. How does that go in those groups?
Right. So there's always the pros and cons to everything. So I can definitely say I think that groups, you see a camaraderie. I think the first thing, especially with adolescents, I can definitely speak to, they like to press boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, and I think anyone to them over the age of like 21 is a dinosaur. So sometimes they look at, whether it be counselors or, you know, teachers, even people that are really positive influences around them, and just say like, you don't get me. You don't know what it's like to be me right now, my age. Like they just.
Which is true. I mean, yeah. I'll grant that.
So having people in groups, which we do have, we don't just, when people do get sober or, you know, are in what we call recovery, we don't just say, oh, you're great, and kick them out of the program.
Right.
We keep people in under what we call recovery services, meaning they have been clean and sober for, and not using, I should say, for 3 months at minimum. And they have the right skills and are able to maintain that. And
so relapse prevention is harm reduction in a way as well.
Very much so. And we acknowledge relapse is part of the process. Relapse will happen, and it's fine. It's part of the process.
It may happen, but it doesn't have to. It's, you know,
yeah.
You may get it right the first time. Let's not jinx you.
Right.
Let's not jinx your good intentions.
So we do have our, like I said, we call recovery our clients who aren't using and have those skills already pretty mastered. And we have them in our groups. Our groups can be anywhere from 2 to 12. They're English, Spanish. And having that support of your peer, like you had mentioned, a peer that's already gone through what you went through, a peer that maybe has some skill building, that has some things to share with you that you haven't thought of, you're more receptive to it as an adolescent, for sure. You're not immediately disengaging or dismissing that person. So having, you know, really those peers that have been in your shoe steps or in your shoes before, it very much, I think, makes the groups very strong. And you can see kids let down their guard and be very motivated to share their stories and be truthful about their healing process and then about their recovery because of that.
So really strongly supportive. We are joined today by Kristen Magana. She's a program supervisor for Imperial County Behavioral Health Services Substance Use Disorder Adolescent Program, and too many to list. She's going to go on break, and she's going to figure out what number she needs to call. So if you're sitting there with a pencil and the pad of paper, we're going to come right back after break, and she's going to give you the contacts for all the presentations for the evidence-based prevention treatment and anything else that SCD Adolescent is offering us. This is Scott Dudley. We are Let's Talk About It. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It. If you have questions about services Imperial County Behavioral Health may offer that deal with today's show topic, feel free to call 760-482-4000. Next week's show topic will be positive and adverse childhood experiences. Let's Talk About It is presented weekly on KXO AM 1230, FM 107.5, and KXORadio.com as a public service of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, Wellness Radio, brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, and we are in the midst of a very important show. And it's important because not only are our youth threatened with the negative consequences of substance use, but it really goes throughout an entire population. Even our elder community sometimes struggles with substance use. And so it's really important to be aware of what we have, aware of what's going on, and aware of the treatment stuff that we're doing at Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, because we really never stop looking forward. And this is such a big, you know, the stuff you've heard today didn't exist 10, 15 years ago. That we have come so far in terms of what we've been able to do with people. It's a kinder, gentler, and no doubt more effective way to manage substance use disorders. So we're joined by Kristen Magana. She's the program supervisor for the Substance Use Disorder Adolescent Clinics. And welcome back, Kristen. I was mentioning future. I know that you think about the future. A lot of this stuff is you've initiated under your, you know, few years there as a supervisor. What do you got on the plate? What's coming up? What kind of cool stuff is going to emerge that's going to make this even better?
So first, I want to give the listeners the numbers that they were promised.
Okay, good deal. Pencils up, everyone.
So I have addresses and numbers for everyone's information. So for adolescent clinics, like you said, we have two, one in El Centro and one in Calexico. So I'm going to start off with the one in El Centro. We are located at 315 South Waterman Avenue in El Centro in the Valley Plaza, next to LabCorp, or directly across from LabCorp. Walk-ins, welcome. We do have clerical at the front, able to answer questions, anything like that. Also, our phone number is 442-265-7270. And all you have to do is call and say you're interested in setting up a presentation, or you had some questions, and we'll be more than happy to answer any questions you might have. In Calexico, our address is 101 Hacienda Drive, Suite B. And our phone number is 442-265-6410. And again, that's our main line. Any questions you might have, please feel free to call. You know, if your other agencies, even to get in contact with myself, Kristen Magana, you can ask for me. Clerical, like I said, always very much willing to help. Willing to answer any questions that anyone might have.
Nice. If I'm up in Calipatria, do I call the El Centro location and kind of connect?
Yes, you can call El Centro, but really it doesn't matter which number you call because we'll get you to the right people. So just going back to your original question with what we see in the future, really I think with mental health and substance use, what we're always trying to do is expand access. Also, a phrase that I've grown to really like is making sure there's no wrong door. So regardless, like I said, of who you call, who you come in contact with, if it's mental health, if it's an office in Calexico, they can not only answer questions but get you to the right clinic that you need to be at to get the services you're seeking.
Wait. You're suggesting that ease of access is also harm reduction?
Everything's harm reduction. Think about it hard enough. You believe in us.
Right.
So that's something I think just as an agency, we're always striving to better, you know, for the community and make things easier. Coming up specifically, you know, for substance use, some of the things that we have things on the horizon that is super exciting to look forward to. Just as someone who, you know, was born here, grew up here, seeing all these things become available and expand. So we do have lots of grants. I had mentioned some of them before. We're in the process of waiting. We had a youth opioid response grant that I've been involved in the past couple years. We submitted that, I believe, January 19th, our third round, and that's specifically for opioid and stimulant use disorders with youth 12 to 24. So we're waiting, hopefully soon by mid-March, we should hear back on that. Again, we have our application for the residential facility. We have one of the things we're looking into working into our clinics is contingency management, which is just harm reduction at its core.
Give me a nutshell of that. What does it do? How does it work?
So contingency management, again, is positive reinforcement and really making sure we have negative outcomes. So contingency management focuses on things such as attendance with the population, with substance use disorder, and especially adolescents. Sometimes even just getting people to appointments are hard. Sometimes it's very, and especially with adolescents, not always in their control what's going on. So we want to make sure that, you know, obviously that first step is getting in the door and then coming in consistently to make sure you can make progress in your treatment. So really contingency management is picking out some goals, positive goals, positive reinforcement, and giving positive reinforcement for reaching those goals.
So it's really about like sticking to the steps that we know are going to bring about generally more positive outcomes and noticing that and tracking it. That's
tracking
what I'm hearing.
It and acknowledging it.
Yeah,
tracking
for sure.
Whenever, you know, we talk about grants and grant funding, I think tracking and data always plays a part. We have to make sure we're doing what we're supposed to do, and outcomes are, you know, obviously what we expected or what we wanted, and if they aren't, what we need to do to change it. So contingency management, like I said, really focuses on things like making sure someone comes into treatment so many times in a row, making sure they get negative drug tests. But if they, for some reason, do get a positive drug test, they're not necessarily, there's no slap on the wrist, right? It's more so, okay, so we're going to acknowledge this. We're going to make sure we address it, but we're, you know, going to move on. And really reframing in a positive manner.
Lots more energy put to, hey, you made it to another appointment and you got another negative test. This is fantastic. So really right. Putting the emphasis on the positive outcomes.
Yes, exactly. So implementing that really at our program levels is something that I think everyone is very much looking forward to. And like I said, really just expanding services. I know our adult SUD is looking to expand into Brawley. Like I said, right now we're just in El Centro and Calexico. We always try to get to all of our larger access points to make it travel easier or more accessible to anyone. So looking into even just maybe putting a clinic in Brawley for our adult SUD clients, for the community, and just overall improvement and really making sure, like I said, that ease of access, outreach, making sure that whenever there's any questions, wherever there's any type of event, we're there to make sure people have our services. One of the things that actually CCT's done that I've heard that I know we participate in, but I've seen and heard amazing feedback is our mall kiosk. So having that there, especially consistently there, staff with people from behavioral health, able to answer questions, and really just making a presence in the community and we're always trying to fight stigma, always trying to, you know, educate and really just making progress in those areas as the years go forward.
Well, you know, it's amazing just having that moment where you look at a sign and say, and it draws you to think about your own mental health, which is so valuable, but it's so easy to forget. And that includes substance use. Obviously, that's a big component of mental health. That's really, you know, I think that's an underrated part of outreach. You know, sometimes it's those hard discussions. Sometimes it's a lot of information, but sometimes it's just somebody looking at you and with a look that says, I care and I'm here to talk if you need me. And that's just enough for you to kind of say, oh, my mental health is important. My children's mental health is important. And we're going to take the steps that we need to take to protect it, to keep it well, to make it bloom and blossom.
Right, and I can't say enough how much I've heard from staff. Sometimes it's just about being in the right place at the right time for those people as well. Like you said, seeing it, I've had my outreach staff come back and say, you know, we were just there handing out brochures, and someone came up to me and started asking me questions about XYZ, and they started tearing up and telling me about their story and, you know, said, thank you so much for being able to provide the referral. I've had my counselors go into the schools, not just for educational purpose, but even for career days. So our adolescents know these careers exist and, you know, what these careers are and what we do. And, you know, that's something they'd be interested in. And again, students have, I've had counselors come back from career days telling me, oh my gosh, you know, a student approached me after the presentation, letting me know someone in their family had, you know, drug use problems and they didn't know what to do, and asking about medication and asking about how they would get someone in. And you know, this simple, like I said, maybe career day presentation turns into almost a tearful kind of like cathartic experience for someone who was in that class or happened to be there and hear that information. And I know even myself as a supervisor, when I go to meetings for other coalitions or whatever it is that we're kind of involved in, I've had people approach me after meetings and kind of stop me and tell me, hey, I have, again, like family member X and they're this and I don't know what to do. What would you recommend? And how do I get into behavioral health? And even if it's mental health, I mean, I've even had so much as people, you know, Instagram me because I often post like, oh, like work training today and, you know, what I'm doing. And I've had people message me, hey, I know you work at behavioral health. How would I do this? Or even how's this process? Like, what do I expect from this? And just sharing that, like, hey, like, this is the process. Expect a lot of questions at your intake. You're going to need to take a few hours off of work because it's going to take a while. And kind of just preparing people, or I think that feeling that someone talking to someone that is in that, you know, chaotic craziness mess and has a handle of the processes, I think it gives comfort. So it is just, you know, to a certain extent, being like the right person at the right place and having people take advantage of that and see that you are, you know, that, oh, here's this thing that I thought I was alone in or that my family was alone in, but there's these people who specialize in it and they're talking about it and it's, you know, being somewhat normalized and opening up those conversations.
And you bring up such an important point because it really speaks to a department attitude. And I think it's really important to point out, if you're wearing the behavioral health logo on your shirt, and that really says to me that, A, that we need to model, right? You know, we're human beings. So if you think that just because we get a logo on our shirts, that means somehow we're immune to mental health disorders, well, that's not exactly true. But we have to model taking care of ourselves, and we have to model valuing our mental health first. But secondly, it's valuing the community enough to say, hey, you can talk to me. I'm wearing this shirt. I've got, you know, behavioral health. You can talk to me about what's going on with you. And if it sounds like you need more help, we'll get you that help. And if it seems like just talking to me is enough for the day and you feel better, then I'm as happy to be there and help and serve the community because that's my role. What do you see in terms of working with the adolescents? You realize we're going to have to create a whole nother generation of mental health professionals. What do you see in terms of pipeline development? Are you able to work with some of your recovering students to kind of encourage them to, as we would say, pay it back? How is that working?
So I've seen, like I said, I think in the years of being a supervisor, I've seen things develop in such a positive way. It's exciting. So we have a few different things. What more schools have reached out to us about is, like I said, career days. And not even just high school career days, but I'm scheduled in the next couple weeks to go to 4th, 5th, 6th graders and talk about careers. And it's not even, like I said, I'm going to be substance use specific. They have mental health and substance use going as well. So I'm seeing, I think, the schools be a lot more proactive. Like I had mentioned before, they're reaching out to us and saying, hey, can you join us? Can you be present? And then on our end, really, I know just creating new opportunities as far as different internship programs, different, you know, really trying to make sure the community not only knows we're here, but getting a taste of what we do so people can really make that informed choice of, hey, this might be something I can see myself doing. The schools have developed some very until I didn't know how far the schools had developed until I got into this, the clinical side, and started working with them. But there's even like healthcare tracks now, almost like very similar to colleges, that wasn't available when I was younger. And so just seeing the schools really prepare for and really prepare the kids for job readiness, what to expect, and giving them the opportunity to be exposed is something that I hadn't known existed until, like I said, I switched from, you know, I was like administration into the clinical side and really started working with the schools. So I think our relationship with the schools and really instead of being, you know, even just partners, but really making sure we have that relationship where it's automatic, which, like you said, I think over the years developed a lot stronger relationships with the school. Unfortunately, I think one of them that started that was COVID. Like we all had to go through COVID and then coming back out of that, seeing the kids come to school and seeing the difference in their mental
It kind of shocked us into the need, right? It kind
very
of made
much
us
so.
Acutely aware of the need.
Very much so. I mean, those needs were there before COVID. I think they just exacerbated these issues, but now to the point to where maybe before it was a secondary or tertiary concern on the school's part, they were other concerns. Now I can see the schools very much be putting that on the forefront of importance. So being able to work at not only admin, but like at the counselors and the schools and kids themselves, I think it's just really building those relationships to make sure, like I said, we can make things as easy as possible and to make sure that everything's easily accessible so we can all get the best outcomes and make sure our community is a really safe place.
Kristen, thank you so much for coming aboard today. I really appreciate your spirit, appreciate all of the various aspects of harm reduction. I'm sitting here thinking, let's talk about it. Is harm reduction. So I appreciate you coming back and making that point so abundantly clear for us and our audience. Thank you so much for coming aboard today. Listeners, thank you for joining us. This is Let's Talk About It. We are sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Join us this week and every week for your wellness radio and make sure and share the show. All right. We'll see you, Kristen. Thank you so much for coming aboard.
Anytime, Scott.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It. Heard each Sunday morning at 7 a.m. on KXO AM 1230 and each Sunday evening at 7 p.m. on FM 107.5. This weekly broadcast is produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO Radio under the direction of Mario Espinosa with the technical assistance of Carol Buckley. Opening and closing narration is provided by Gene Brister. Co-hosts for tonight's program were Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Let's Talk About It brings weekly community mental health issues to your radio. This program is produced for and presented as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Leticia Plancarte, Garcia, Director.